So tell me, how's your bracket?
Mine's online, so, you know. You could go see it and see how embarrassing it is. Last time I checked, I'm sponsoring a free bracket challenge, and I'm in last place. Go figure. Mm-mm-mm. Hello, everybody. Well, here we are on Sunday night, and the Final Four is set, and there's change on Broad Street and lots to talk about, so let's get to it. On this edition of Central Region Now, the exclusive podcast, the full-length podcast of the RVA Sports Network. Got to make that distinction now, thanks to the debut last week of AM RVA, the exclusive morning mini podcast of the RVA Sports Network. And for those of you who have downloaded and listened and have started to make AMRVA a part of your morning routine, we appreciate that immensely. We expect to take a long time for the podcast to really make the difference that we feel like it's going to do, and we're in it for the long haul. So tell your friends that are sports fans, especially at the local sports level. You know, the number one reason why we made this idea, why don't we do a morning mini podcast so that when people wake up, they can get caught up on what's happening, was number one, we know a lot of our demographic do not read the newspaper in the morning. Number two, a lot of you very busy in the morning. You're trying to hurry up and get ready to get to work, or you're hurrying up and getting ready to get to school, whether by the bus or the car. And it's just easier for you to click a couple of buttons on your tablet or your smartphone, or even in your smart car. Just a couple of buttons and boom, you're there, and you can listen in 3 to 4 minutes. That's the average length of our podcast every morning, Monday through Friday. We get you caught up on what happened the night before, and we look ahead to the day ahead as to what's going to happen. So you know the biggest games coming, the headlines that may have happened while you slept, those sorts of things. So AMRVA, the exclusive podcast of the RVA Sports Network, the morning mini version, is available every weekday morning at 6 a.m. How do I find it, you ask? Very simple. We always tweet out a link with a link to the podcast on all four of our Twitter feeds at exactly 6 o'clock in the morning. So if you get up at 6:30, just go to our Twitter page, whichever one you follow, the RVA SportsNet, Hanover Sports, Henrico Sports, or Chesterfield Sports. Check the timeline. It's probably at the top, at 6:30 in the morning. My 6:45, other things may have happened, but it'll be right there on the timeline. Or you can always go to rvasportsnetwork.com, and at the top of the page every morning will be the latest edition of AMRVA. And I've tested it on my smartphone. It's a total of 2 clicks, and you've got the podcast. So we hope you'll join us every morning for AMRVA, Monday through Friday, from RVASN. And, of course, our Central Region Now podcast continues through the spring season every Sunday. A little bit later than usual this week, on Sunday evening rather than Sunday afternoon. We'd like to get them out Sunday afternoons, but some situations precluded us from that happening today. Well, since we are talking here late in the evening, let's go ahead and opine just a bit about basketball and the Final Four. And I do have a thought or two on Mike Rhodes to VCU that I want to share with you as well. You know, a lot of pundits have been saying this, and I've said it too, not really publicly, because we don't talk a lot of college basketball here on the RVA Sports Network, but to people I have talked to about the subject, I've said, I think on multiple occasions during this season, even going back to the early part of the season, you know, there are 15 or 20 teams who could conceivably win the national championship. And so, as surprising as the Final Four lineup is, if we think about the season and the way it has unfolded, it really shouldn't be that much of a surprise, with the exception of South Carolina. Now, South Carolina came out of nowhere in the tournament. I had them losing in the first round to Marquette. I think a lot of people did. Before we hit the podcast, I think we read somewhere the statistic was of the almost 19 million brackets that were filled out at ESPN.com. And that's just on that website. That's not talking about CBS Sports and Yahoo and other places. Of those almost 19 million brackets, 657 got the Final Four right. 657 brackets. Gonzaga, I am so happy for them. Of course, I remember, some of you don't, but I remember their breakthrough season in 99 when they zoomed all the way to the Elite Eight, the year Gus Johnson in the Sweet 16 proclaimed the slipper still fits. And they ended up losing in the regional final, but that was the arrival on the national scene of Gonzaga. Then Mark Few comes in, and they become a West Coast powerhouse. And they're consistently in the tournament, consistently into the Sweet 16, but were never able to get through that second weekend and make it to the promised land. And now they finally have, and they are going to be a force to be reckoned with. That first national semifinal on Saturday, it'll be Gonzaga, South Carolina, just after 6 p.m. I, frankly, am more interested in that game than I am in the Oregon-North Carolina game. With that game, I have an idea of what to expect. And, you know, kudos to Oregon. Injury issues and players are stepping up and playing over their heads. And the Ducks make their first Final Four appearance since the first Final Four. Now, let me take you back a little history lesson for those of you who don't remember. 1939, I don't either, okay? So don't start that mess. let's see, 1939, my dad would have been 7, and my mom, in March of that year, would have been 5 months old. So my parents were just getting started. But the NCAA held its first Final Four in 1939, and Oregon beat Ohio State for the first national championship. Now, that was back in the day when the National Invitation Tournament, you know it better as the NIT, was the big dog. And the NIT continued to be the big tournament through the 40s and well into the 50s. It was back in the Wilt Chamberlain era at Kansas. You got to go back to the 1957 NCAA championship game when Wilt and Kansas faced Lenny Rosenbluth and North Carolina, and they had a triple overtime thriller won by the Tar Heels, the 1957 NCAA championship. That was the tipping point or the tide turn into what was popular and what was considered more important or prestigious, the NCAA tournament or the NIT. Had some good games during the 60s. You had the ascension of UCLA. You had the incredible story of Texas Western, now UTEP, the first 5 all-black starters to play on a team that won the national championship. Don Haskins, the legendary head coach. But it would be the 1970s before the NCAA really firmly cemented itself, and it happened two ways. Number one, and the ACC was the reason for this happening. Into the 1970s, the tournament, very small, at most 32 teams, and you had to win your conference championship to make it. And so in 1974, the ACC tournament championship was between North Carolina and Maryland. And at the time, North Carolina State, Maryland, and UCLA, the defending champions, they were the top 3 teams in the polls. Okay? What that meant was the loser of the ACC tournament championship in 74 not only would not win the ACC tournament title, they would not even make the NCAA tournament. And so as it happened, North Carolina State beats Maryland, another overtime, multiple overtime thriller, and David Thompson and Tommy Burleson and company knock off Lenny Elmore and John Lucas and the University of Maryland, headed, of course, by Lefty Drizzell. The next season, the NCAA thought, you know what, this only conference thing is kind of stupid. We need to have at-large bids. And so the at-large bid system began in 1975. 4 years later, Bird and Magic played for the title in 79, and I remember watching that game as if it were yesterday. And the popularity of the NCAA tournament, that's when it began an upward trajectory that, quite frankly, it hasn't leveled off yet. Tournament is having BAFO ratings this year, and I think part of it is because there are just so many teams going into it who had a chance. You know, when you got, like, a couple of years ago when we were all joking that it was the Kentucky Invitational and everybody thought Kentucky would run away with the title, and they ended up losing in the semis to Wisconsin and Duke won the title. But I think when you have that unanimous number one team clear favorite situation going into the tournament, it hurts the value of the tournament because a lot of casual fans and a lot of casual fans of teams in the tournament won't be as interested because they figure, well, you know, we're in Kentucky's region, and if we make the Sweet 16, we're going to lose to them. So, hey, well, whatever, whatnot. But this year, I think there's a correlation between the fact that there were 15, 20 teams that you could argue, and argue quite strongly, they could win the national championship, and here's why. And it would be hard to poke arguments holes in your arguments. And now we're down to Gonzaga, South Carolina, Oregon, and North Carolina. You've got a rabid fan base in the Pacific Northwest, Seattle included, that will be watching because Gonzaga finally got there. Just south of them, you've got a rabid fan base in Oregon, including Portland, who are going to be watching because they've finally made it back after 78 years. And then you've got the hotbed of college basketball, and that's in the Southeast, with an ACC school, and if you didn't know, a former ACC school that eventually wound up in the Southeastern Conference in South Carolina. And what's the connection between North and South Carolina other than the fact that they have a border? A gentleman by the name of Frank McGuire. McGuire, longtime coach at North Carolina, including being the head coach of that 57 national championship team. And when he left to go to South Carolina to be the head coach there, a gentleman by the name of Dean Smith replaced him in Chapel Hill. So the Final Four is going to be a lot of fun this year. New faces, teams you didn't expect, Cinderella story, and you have a blue blood of college basketball looking to come back and atone for that heartbreaking loss at the buzzer to Villanova last year. So it's going to be fun. Going to be fun. We'll have to put a poll up on Twitter, find out right now, just early indication who you think might win two in Arizona and take the title. Now, let's move it closer to home, and then we'll get to our new top 10 polls. Want to talk a minute about the whirlwind events at VCU over the last week. A week ago tonight, things started to brew about Will Wade and LSU, and then they quickly escalated. And by Monday night, Will Wade to LSU was looking good, which of course was looking bad for VCU fans. And it was really interesting to gauge the initial 12-hour period when the news became official that Wade was going to Baton Rouge and compare it to the initial 12-hour period after Shaka Smart was connected to and did agree to go to the University of Texas. There seemed to be even more angst this time than there was the first time, which you would think it would have been the other way around. But I think what happened here was it was a case of it happening so quickly, and Coach Wade had only been there two seasons, and so we had gone through several Shaka watches before he finally took the plunge and went down to Austin in 2015, that I think by the time he actually said yes to another team, part of the reaction was shock, and part of the reaction was fatigue, because this had been an issue every single offseason in late March, early April, since the 2011 Final Four run. But Will Wade, only 2 years on the job, and then suddenly he's off to Baton Rouge. I personally think VCU is better off tonight than they were a week ago. And I know that's saying a lot, and I have a lot of respect for Will Wade as a coach. I thought he did a tremendous job here in 2 years. When you consider the recruits that did not come after Shaka Smart left and what Wade had to work with working from behind, so to speak, still able to keep that 24-win season mark alive, still able to get to the A-10 tournament championship both last year and this year, still able to get to the NCAA tournament, didn't do as well this year, but had a very strong performance in the tournament in 2016. Ended up losing to a team that eventually made the Final Four. Wade, I think, will be successful in the SEC, but I think it will take some time. But Will Wade is about to find out what Shaka Smart found out 2 years ago when he moved to Austin. He is a basketball coach at a football school, and it will never, ever, ever change. And if you don't believe me at LSU, just go back and look at the history of LSU. They had Pistol Pete Maravich, one of the greatest college basketball players of all time. They had the Dale Brown era, where they made the Final Four twice in the 1980s. But you got to remember, the first time they did it, it was kind of expected. That was in 81, and they lost in the national finals to eventual champ, semifinals to eventual champion Indiana. 5 years later, they made it as an 11th seed. They became the first 11th seed in NCAA tournament history to run to the Final Four. Since then, it's happened a couple of more times. In George Mason, VCU, and last year, Syracuse. And then Dale Brown had Shaquille O'Neal, and he had some talented players around Shaquille O'Neal, and they didn't make it to the Final Four back in the early 90s. It is hard to win basketball at a football school. Shaka Smart has learned that. Will Wade will learn that. Now, here's my feeling on the new head coach, Mike Rhodes. Number one, I wanted Mike Rhodes to be the new head coach 2 years ago. Now, I enjoy VCU basketball. I am not one of the, I'm not a rabid VCU fan, but I've been a fan of VCU since, God, the Chuck Noh days. I mean, when my first recollections of VCU, they were still playing their home games in the Franklin Street Gym. Okay, boy, I'm really dating myself on this podcast tonight, aren't I? Oh, well. I'm also a University of Richmond fan because they're in my city. So I support both. I support Virginia Union because they're in my city. I support Virginia State because they're essentially in my city, just outside in Ettrick in Chesterfield County. So I love the local teams. I wanted Mike Rhodes to take the job in 2015, but I knew he wouldn't because he had just completed his first season at Rice. And Coach Rhodes is not the kind of person who would yank the rug up underneath Rice after 1 year. Now, Will Wade had been at Chattanooga for two, and you have a little bit of a better opportunity to make the move once you've been somewhere multiple seasons. Never got the impression that Will Wade, during his 2 years here, was here trying to build something for himself long term. So for him to leave after just two seasons didn't surprise me, quite frankly, at all. Coach Rhodes, little history lesson for those of you who don't know the back end of Coach Rhodes's career resume, if you go further down page one. A lot of you knew he was brought on as Shaka's assistant in 2009, and you knew that he left in 14 to become the Rice head coach, and now he's back. Some of you know that prior to that, he was at Randolph-Macon. But I think you need to understand the basketball program, the basketball tradition, and the basketball culture at Randolph-Macon. And if you do, you will better understand Mike Rhodes. And here's what I mean. When Mike Rhodes was named head coach at Randolph-Macon in 1999, in the previous 43 years, two men had coached Randolph-Macon college basketball. Two. Paul Webb, who coached from 1957 to 1975, legendary coach, moved on to coach for a long time successfully at Old Dominion University. And so it ended up that Coach Paul Webb played a lot of games against their then arch rival, VCU. Back in my days, in the 70s and early 80s, especially with the Sun Belt Conference, VCU Old Dominion was it. VCU and Richmond played once a year, and it was a rivalry, and it was a big game, but it wasn't VCU Old Dominion. That was the be-all and end-all a generation ago. So Webb goes on to coach there. Hal Nunley picks up the torch at Randolph-Macon. He will coach for 24 seasons. So and both of them unbelievably successful. And you got to remember, during this time, Randolph-Macon was a Division II team. In 77, they went to the Division II Final Four. Later on down the road, they moved down to Division III, where they are today. 1999, Hal Nunley retires, and Mike Rhodes takes the realm. He's 10 years and 197 wins into his tenure. His 2003 team made the Sweet 16 of the Division III tournament, and his 2009-2010 team that would have been his had he not taken the job with Shaka at VCU as an assistant, they made it to the Division III Final Four in the first year under Nathan Davis. So Mike Rhodes is coming from a school that has a rich basketball tradition. In fact, I would argue that it's richer than its football tradition. There have been some good eras in Randolph-Macon football. But Randolph-Macon basketball has been very consistent for decades. And there are men who have left their mark on the game, not just in Virginia, but across the nation. Well, you start talking about Paul Webb, you're talking about one of the pioneers of college basketball. And we still see Coach Webb occasionally at games from time to time up at Crenshaw Gymnasium, still up and at it and watching and enjoying. It's always great to see him there. Mike Rhodes would have been very happy to have stayed at Randolph-Macon for an indeterminate period of time. But when Shaka Smart came calling, it was an opportunity that he, at this point, felt that he couldn't pass up. He left Macon in great hands. Randolph-Macon turned to Nathan Davis. He came in and had a phenomenal six-year run, including that Final Four trip and a trip to the Elite Eight and that 25-game winning streak 2 years ago. Before he went off and took on the job at Bucknell, and of course, he got Bucknell back to the NCAA tournament this year. So we had former Randolph-Macon head coach Nathan Davis in the tournament with Bucknell, former Randolph-Macon player and assistant Greg Marshall in it again with Wichita State. All this to say, when Mike Rhodes talked in his opening press conference about coming home and being home and the ride stops here, that's not hyperbole. I will be stunned if Mike Rhodes is a short-term coach at VCU. I expect him to be at VCU for a long, long time. And that is going to bring the stability that, quite frankly, VCU's program has not had in a very long time. And when I say really long time, I mean really long time. Did you know that in the history of VCU basketball, there has never been a coach there 10 years or longer? The longest tenured coach was Sonny Smith, who came on in 1989 with great fanfare, having been the former head coach at Auburn. He was Charles Barkley's college coach. He came in, guided them through the transition from the Sun Belt to the Metro Conference and eventually from the Metro to the Colonial. But his overall record was 51%. He won 136 and he lost 127. And some people see some of those years, especially the years where Kendrick Warren was there on campus. They made it to the Metro Conference Championship one season. But other than that, there was more disappointment than there was success. And then since then, you had Mac McCarthy for 4, Jeff Capel for 4, Anthony Grant for 3, Shaka Smart for 6, Will Wade for 2. And with Shaka Smart, after his second season and the Final Four trip, the rest of his 6-year tenure was marked every year by Shaka Watch. And so, no matter how well VCU did or did not do, and they were always successful under Smart, at the end of the year, VCU fans all had to go through a sometimes 3 to 4 week edge-of-your-seat thrill ride to determine whether or not they'd keep their head coach. Every single year. And so even though Smart was here for 6 seasons, it didn't feel that long, simply because of all the twists and turns that went on. So Sonny Smith, the longest tenured at 9. Smart with 6 years. Before Sonny Smith, there was J.D. Barnett, who was, in terms of winning percentage, he was the best head coach, quote-unquote, in VCU history until Anthony Grant's 3 seasons. And then after that, Shaka Smart's 6 seasons. Anthony Grant won 75% of his games in 3 years before he moved on to Alabama. Shaka Smart won 74.4% of his games. And J.D. Barnett, he won 73.3% of his games. He was very successful. And before him, 3 years in the late 70s, Dana Kirk, who ended up going to Memphis and taking them to the 85 Final Four, he was successful too, 71% winning percentage. And before him, the legendary Chuck Noe. Chuck went 95-42 in 6 seasons. So I remember now 11 of the 12 coaches in VCU history. And Mike Rhodes strikes me as someone who is going to be here for as long as VCU wants him to be here. And that is exactly what VCU basketball needs right now. No more watches in March. No more hashtags about is our coach staying or going. VCU has reached a new era and level, thanks in part to the Final Four appearance, but thanks also in part just to the hard work in the last decade to parlay that, okay? Because remember, 11 years ago, George Mason did the same thing, made it to the Final Four as an 11 seed. Applications to the school skyrocketed, and George Mason was on the national scene. And look at George Mason basketball now. Middle-tiered, if that, Atlantic 10 conference team. Look at VCU. How many years, 24 wins plus? How many straight NCAA tournaments? Building on that Final Four appearance in a tournament year where Jay Billis said VCU shouldn't even be here in the first four. Why did they make the field so famously? And they ended up winning out of the first four all the way to Houston that April. So my thoughts on VCU is VCU is set for a long time. And if Mike Rhodes ends up being a short-term coach, it's either going to be a situation completely out of his control or something that we simply cannot foresee. But I just don't see... I think he's going to be very successful. Two of the 2017 recruits have already announced, including one today, Marcus Santos Silva, said, "I'm coming to VCU. There are no changes." I think he's going to keep most of the recruiting class in and most of the roster, something Will Wade was not able to do. But, it was tougher losing Shaka Smart. name recognition, et cetera, et cetera. It would be something out of Mike's control, I think, if he ends up being short term. But I think VCU's set and set for quite a while. And that's the best thing that could happen to VCU basketball, because when you have a good coach, you've got stability. You're not going into every offseason wondering, is my coach going to be here? Is he going to take the assistants with him? What am I going to do? And you know, when you step into the Siegel Center, I'm going to be here for 4 years. And my coach is likely going to be here for 4 years. That's a big feeling. That's a huge feeling, especially now that VCU is not the VCU of the Sun Belt, nor the Metro, nor the CAA, and not really even the VCU of the Atlantic 10, but the VCU who has gone into the upper echelon of the Atlantic 10. You could argue from a national perspective in the Atlantic 10, for basketball purposes, there is Dayton, there is VCU, and there is everybody else. And that's no offense to the University of Richmond. But Richmond is still known as the school that beat Syracuse. You know, Richmond's still kind of known by the Dick Tarrant years. And those years have now gotten further and further behind. So this is going to be a very important offseason and next recruiting class for Chris Mooney over at Richmond, because he's got a lot he's going to have to replace with the graduating seniors, the heart and soul of that team, T.J. Klein and company, heading out. And what a 4 years they had, tremendous contribution there to the program as well. And that's, you know, it's hard for VCU and for Richmond to be in the same conference in the same city, both trying to get rid of the mid-major mentality. And so far, VCU has been more successful in it than the University of Richmond has. But Richmond is one tournament run away from having the exact same situation. Simple as that. So going to be an interesting offseason to watch as we prepare for November for both Coach Rhodes' debut and to see how Coach Mooney is able to replace that senior class. And he's really going to rely on guys like Buck. Monty Buckingham is going to be a huge part of that Richmond program for the next 3 years, the A-10 Rookie of the Year. All right, fans, we talked a lot more about basketball than I ever dreamed to do, but we had a big week. We really did. When you think about it, we could go back and look at this week 3, 5, 10 years from now as being a watershed week in VCU history, in Richmond history, and possibly in college basketball history. I think this Final Four could be very important for the next 5, 10, 20 years of the NCAA. I think it's very, very important that Gonzaga made the Final Four in this age and era where the Power Five conferences are talking about breaking off and doing their own thing and snubbing their nose at the NCAA and saying, we're out of here, which for all intents and purpose would take the NCAA and make it the NIT of college organizations. I think it was huge that we had a regional final, an Elite Eight game between Gonzaga and Xavier. Now, I know Xavier's in the Big East. I get that. But the Big East ain't what the Big East used to be. But the Big East had a great year this year, 7 teams in the tournament. And so we were guaranteed that one of these teams would finally break the glass ceiling and make it to the Final Four. So I think it's important for Gonzaga to be there. I think it's important for another newbie in South Carolina to be there, and important for an Oregon who hasn't been there since they won the first one they ever had to be there too. And for ratings purposes, I know the NCAA was happy either way. They would have taken Kentucky or North Carolina because they drive eyeballs to the television. But I think this is going to be a very highly rated Final Four, and I think it could be a Final Four that really transcends things and maybe even boosts the tournament even more going on in the future. We'll see as the future unfolds. Let's talk baseball, softball at the high school level, shall we? All right, back in our wheelhouse, back to our bread and butter. Top 10 polls out for week number 2. We're going to begin with softball. Minor changes in the top 10 softball poll. Cosby, the only team to drop out of the poll. We do have a new team in the top 10. At number 10 this week, down one from number 9, the Generals of Dinwiddie. Dinwiddie did suffer a loss to the new team in the top 10 poll, and that is J.R. Tucker. The Tigers of J.R. Tucker off to a fantastic start. Now, they had lost their first game on Friday night against Mills Godwin, a team just outside of our top 10, and a team that played number 1 Atlee pretty well last week as well. So we're going to keep an eye on Mills Godwin. They and J.R. Tucker are kind of right there with Deep Run in the middle of Conference 11. It's pretty clear that right now the top of Conference 11 is Lee Davis-Glen Allen. And, of course, they played Thursday night. We had it here on the game of the week. Lee Davis pushes two runs in the sixth, wins it 2-0 in a typical Lee Davis-Glenn Allen softball game. Fully expected something like that to unfold, and that's exactly what did. If you're Lee Davis-Glenn Allen, and I'm Lee Davis right now, I'm happy because I've got the win in hand on Glenn Allen. Case there's a, you know, something going on at the end of the season. Now, at the end of the year, they don't do head-to-heads in Conference 11. It's all about the rating points. But every win you can get you closer to a top seed. And in 11, the top six of the eight make the tournament, and top two seeds get a bye. So you get a bye at one or two, but I'd rather be one because I may avoid a team like a J.R. Tucker or a Mills Godwin or a developing deep run that is playing their best softball come Memorial Day. And you don't want to play somebody like that in the semis at the conference level, because if you lose that one game, you don't make it to the region. Your season is suddenly and jarringly over. So keeping an eye on Mills Godwin, but J.R. Tucker new to our top 10 at number 9. The top 8 stay the same. Clover Hill at 8, Prince George at 7, Powhatan still unbeaten there at 6, Manchester still unbeaten there at 5. They go to Lee Davis on Wednesday night. That's going to be a good one. Top 4, still intact. Glenn Allen, although they lost 2-0 at Lee Davis Thursday night, they hold steady at number 4. As is normally the case with any time Glenn Allen plays any of the Hanover schools or any time the Hanover schools play each other, it comes down to one or two critical plays. And it's rare when you get a game that finishes up 5-1 or 6-0. You just almost never see it in that combination. Glenn Allen, so they hold steady at number 4. They will be a force to be reckoned with. Number 3, Patrick Henry. They get 2 wins this past week. They shut out Deep Run on the road. Then they go to Louisa the next night, beat them 7-2 in a make-good game from the game the week before that was canceled due to the weather and moved to the following week. And so the Patriots are unbeaten. Lee Davis unbeaten at 2-0. They're still number 2. And again, they've got Manchester coming in Wednesday. And still number 1 at 4-0, the Raiders of Atlee, the two-time defending state champions. And, of course, if everything holds to form, of course, the top 10 won't change by then. We are looking at the possibility of some weather issues. We are scheduled to have number 1 Atlee at number 2 Lee Davis on our game of the week Friday night on the RVA Sports Network. Now, we'll keep an eye on the skies and what the forecasters say. If it looks certain that it's going to rain, what I'm hoping they don't do is they move up the game to Thursday night. Now, if they do, then we would move our broadcast up to Thursday night. The reason why I don't want that to happen is that lacrosse is playing a lot of games that Thursday night, and we want to try to get to some of the lacrosse matches this week on Thursday. And then, you know, do the softball on Friday as scheduled. So maybe the forecast will change. I'm holding out hope that that will be the case. But top 10 softball, again, only one team out, one new team in, and only one team moved within the poll. And that was Dinwiddie down from 9 to 10. J.R. Tucker moves in at 9. Cosby drops out. The top 8 the same. Clover Hill at 8. Prince George at 7. Powhatan 6. Manchester 5. Glenn Allen 4. Patrick Henry 3. Lee Davis 2. And Atlee at 1. Here's your top 10 baseball poll. Manchester drops out of the poll after a loss to a team that is now into the poll. And we've got some pretty big shakeups. Number 10, James River. They get a win over Franklin County on Saturday, but lost this past week, drops them from 2 to 10. And they are behind the team they lost to, and that is holding steady at number 9, the Cosby Titans. So James River at 10, Cosby at 9. Douglas Freeman, interesting situation here. They play at Glenn Allen Tuesday night. They are no hit by Kenny Jackson. And maybe you've seen it by now. If you haven't, go to our Henrico Sports Twitter feed, and you will find the tweet where we had the video of the final out of the game, which was via a hit-by-pitch, a very unusual and rarely used call, but the correct call by the umpire that gave the junior a no-hitter, and Glenn Allen beat Douglas Freeman 2-0. USA Today picked up on it and wrote a story about it, and used our video, with our permission, on that particular story. And we were happy they were able to do that, and we were happy that Kenny Jackson got some national recognition for his accomplishment on Tuesday night. But Freeman turns around Friday and gets a very important win over defending 2A state champion Maggie Walker. Maggie Walker, you know, y'all, some of you are probably thinking, oh, yeah, Maggie Walker, yeah, big deal. Everybody beats him, yada, yada. can I remind you that they are the defending 2A state champions? Yes, they lost players to graduation, but Maggie Walker's always a very tough team. And the advantage Maggie Walker has is that even if they lose some games to Colonial District teams in the regular season, so long as their record is not too out of balance, they put themselves in a position when by the time they get exclusively playing 2A schools in conference and regional tournaments, you look at the experience they have playing Freeman twice and Glen Allen twice and Deep Run twice and Mills Godwin twice. Are you kidding? They have an advantage over most of the 2A brethren once they get into the postseason. So we'll be talking, I think, more about Maggie Walker when we get closer to the end of May and possibly even back into June once again. So Freeman goes 1-1 this week, but they move up in the poll two spots. New to the poll at number 7, the team that knocked off Manchester last week. And then, thanks to some wildness by the Atlee Raiders pitching staff, they get a walk-off extra inning win at home. The Thomasdale Knights in the top 10 for the first time at number 7. Moving up 2 to number 6, undefeated still, Tevin Tucker and company, the Prince George Royals. And here's your new top 5. Little changes here. Lee Davis holds at 5. Glen Allen on Thursday night got a big lead in Mechanicsville, 8-0 going into the bottom of the 6th inning. Hunter Beck hits a 2-run homer, makes it 8-2. And then Lee Davis mounts a heck of a comeback in the bottom of the 7th. They score 4. They put 2 on, and they have the winning run at the plate, which seemed unfathomable 30 minutes earlier. But unfortunately for them and fortunately for Glen Allen, they were able to get the third and final out. They held on to win 8-6 the final. So Glen Allen jumps Lee Davis in the polls. They were number 6 last week. They are now number 4. Lee Davis holds at number 5. Benedictine holds at number 3 in the poll this week. Mills Godwin, that's wrong. That is a misprint. I made a mistake. We'll have to correct that. Benedictine moves up one from 4 to 3 because Mills Godwin was 3 last week, and they've moved up 1 to 2. And holding steady at number 1 is Hanover. Big game coming up for Hanover tomorrow, Monday night. Another big game for them coming up at the end of the week. And then a possible 1-versus-2 showdown in a week from now. Hanover on Monday night hosts Deep Run. That's one of our two games of the week. We'll have it for you on the RVA Sports Network on our YouTube channel Monday night at 7. Then later in the week, they play Patrick Henry. And then if they get through those and Mills Godwin gets through their week, it'll be Mills Godwin number 2 at number 1 Hanover a week from tomorrow, April 3rd, also at 7 p.m. Now, we do not have that on our broadcast schedule yet. We may broadcast it. We may not. If we don't, we definitely will have live tweet coverage of the game on Henrico Sports and Hanover Sports. But that's going to be a big one. But yeah, Benedictine moves up 1 to number 3. Godwin moves up 1 to number 2. And Hanover stays at number 1. So the new baseball top 10, Hanover 1, Mills Godwin 2, Benedictine 3, Glen Allen 4, Lee Davis 5, then Prince George, new to the poll, Thomasdale at 7, Douglas Freeman 8, Cosby 9, James River 10, Manchester drops out of the poll. Don't forget, next Sunday night is the debut of our Super 6 polls in boys and girls lacrosse and boys and girls soccer. Got our first look at both sports, took in several matches this week. And that's one of the reasons why we wait and do those polls after a few weeks of the season have been played. We tend to get to more baseball and softball games, and sometimes it's easier because the baseball and softball games are happening simultaneously. So like this past Monday, I was watching Atlee Midlothian baseball and softball. I could stand in one position and just turn to my left and see baseball and turn to my right and see softball. Tomorrow night, we'll be taking in some of the Hanover Deep Run softball game before we broadcast the baseball game. But to get to boys and girls soccer, boys and girls lacrosse, you got to kind of commit yourself to that particular game, that particular evening. So we had chances past week to see the Atlee Deep Run boys game. In lacrosse, in soccer, we saw the Douglas Freeman and Glen Allen boys game. We saw the girls matchup Friday evening between Hanover and Verina. And we're trying to get to more and more. But the Super 6 polls for those two sports, 4 polls in all, debut next Sunday. So next Sunday here on the podcast, a half a dozen polls. This spring sports season is always our busiest. Always. You know, no, we don't have football. No, we don't have basketball. But spring sports, busier than any other season of our year. And our year is split up into four seasons. You've got the fall season with football, volleyball, field hockey, cross country, competition cheer. You've got the winter season with basketball, indoor track, gymnastics, swimming, wrestling, et cetera, et cetera. But in spring, you've got so many team sports going on simultaneously. Six between baseball, softball, boys and girls soccer, boys and girls lacrosse. Then you add in boys and girls tennis. And lest we forget, outdoor track. And there is just a ton of action going on. We thank all of our reporters who have been giving us information and updates in games and after games. And again, if for whatever reason you don't see your score on one of our Twitter feeds and you want to know why it's not there and you are at the game, all you got to do is DM us, send us the score. You can become our reporter. We're getting more and more coaches to get us information on a regular basis, but sometimes that's easier said than done, I'll be honest with you. So if you want to become one of our reporters and let us know, hey, what happened to your team tonight, we'll be glad to do it. And we've had players in the past who have sent us scores and have requested, please don't say who sent it to you. I want to stay anonymous. And I understand that because maybe the coach doesn't want you to, you know. Now, if your coach tells you not to send stuff on Twitter, then don't do it. Don't go against what your coach says. But if your coach doesn't have a problem with it but would rather you remain anonymous, we don't have to you know, tell everybody who you are. We can have it as the anonymous source. We've done that many times before with young men and young women who have just requested, look, here's the score. I want to support it. I want to tell you what happened, but don't give me any credit. And we're like, okay, well, we respect that. That's not a problem. So, all right, moving on. Game of the week this week, two coming up. Monday night, deep run at number one Hanover in baseball. Friday night, weather permitting, number one versus number two in softball, at Lee Davis, both at 7 o'clock Eastern. Want to look ahead real quick to the rest of our current schedule, which we are continuing to build, and the schedule always available on all four of our websites on the right-hand side of the page, including at rvasportsnetwork.com. A week from Tuesday, we're going to be at Thomas Dale to broadcast Thomas Dale softball for the very first time. I am very excited about coming to Chester. It'll be Thomas Dale hosting number 7 Prince George, and we'll get underway at 5 o'clock Eastern time. Note the special start time, 5 p.m., next Tuesday, April 4th. The next night, Wednesday, April 5th, after we spend the afternoon watching big softball action in ODAC play between Randolph-Macon and Virginia Wesleyan, we fly over to Atlee and get ready for boys lacrosse. Hanover takes their stab at unbeaten Atlee, who's off to a very hot start this season. They're 4-0, and their four wins, James River, Deep Run, Douglas Freeman, Patrick Henry, Roanoke. That's an impressive start for the Raiders, who spent the last two seasons in the 5A state championship watching somebody else get the trophy, and they want to make it back and get the job done this time. And they're playing like they mean it early in the season. Hanover at Atlee on Wednesday night, April the 5th at 7:30. During spring break, Liberty Christian's coming to Hanover for a rematch of that wild 4A state championship from last June. That's our game of the week over spring break on April 13th. And then on May 2nd, for the fourth consecutive year, we will have live coverage of the baseball rivalry that is Cosby and James River. And it'll be the rematch. Cosby's up 1-0, but they got to come to James River on May 2nd. We'll have it for you on our game of the week. And we'll have more games being scheduled for the rest of the regular season. And as they are made official with ADs across the area, we'll add them to our broadcast schedules on all four of our websites. So coming up this week, some things to talk about, some things to keep an eye on. We've got Deep Run at number one Hanover in baseball, the game of the week on Monday night. Looking forward to that. On Tuesday, a very important girls tennis match. Deep Run, Mills Godwin. Mills Godwin, a decade and a half dominance in girls tennis, ended by Deep Run last year. Deep Run lost no one to graduation. Mills Godwin, very strong coming back too, but they've got some freshmen and some key holes. Deep Run Mills Godwin scheduled to play at 4:30 Tuesday. We plan to be there on Henrico Sports on Twitter. Wednesday right now, we're kind of up in the air. We've got several different locations we're considering going. On Thursday night, it is looking more and more like we are going to be at Hanover for girls lacrosse action between the Hawks and upstart Patrick Henry. Patriots have started their season 3-0 under brand new head coach Taylor Huber. And that would give us a chance to see those two teams for the very first time. That's on Thursday. And again, weather permitting, Friday night, it is rivalry night, and it is number one versus number two, Atlee at Lee Davis Softball, 7 o'clock here on the RVA Sports Network. Randolph-Macon baseball finally back at home after a 7-game, 3-week road trip, on Saturday. They have a doubleheader against Washington and Lee. Coach Ray Hedrick going up against one of his former assistants, who's now the head coach for the Generals. It's a noon start for game one. We're going to be at least at game number one before we head out to Farmville Saturday night. Very happy to say that my daughter has a role in Legally Blonde, the musical, taking place at Waterworks. Waterworks is a professional theater company in Farmville, just outside of the town, a lot like Barksdale or Swift Creek Mill here in the Richmond area. And it'll be her first time back on stage since her high school days at Glen Allen. And she's excited about it, and I'm very excited about watching her. And so I'm going to be dad next Saturday night. I hope you guys don't mind. Our next Central Region Now podcast will be next Sunday, and I'll give you a review of the show. And, of course, we'll have new baseball, softball polls, and the first Super 6 polls for soccer and lacrosse. And don't forget, the way to start your day now is AMRVA, the morning mini podcast of RVASN. We get your day started in 4 minutes or less every morning with the latest sports news, a look ahead to the day in sports, latest weather, and any pertinent news that you need to know. It's on AMRVA every morning. It drops at 6 a.m. Links to it on our Twitter feeds. And the podcast is always at the top of the page every morning at RVASportsNetwork.com. All right. Thanks for being with us for a different Central Region Now podcast, an exclusive property of the RVA Sports Network and solely responsible for its content. It's also intended for the private, non-commercial use of our audience, and any other use of it without the express written consent of HCS Media LLC is strictly prohibited. And I've said this before, just a quick reminder, HCS Media LLC is owned and completely owned by my wife. And we've been together 29 years, and you don't want to make my wife mad. Hope you've enjoyed the podcast, everybody. Thanks so much for being with us. Rob Witham saying have a great week. Lots of action coming up as we wrap up March. Back with you next Sunday, and back with you every morning this week on AMRVA. Have a great one, everybody.